Good afternoon. Welcome in once again. It's Jimmy B and TC here, 1700 KBGG. Brinson off today. That means you just got me. And then we have a slew of great guests as well. We got a busy one coming up this afternoon. In fact, Wolfgang set to join us in just a couple of minutes. We'll get into a lot with Wolfgang, talk some Iowa spring football. We'll talk Final Four. And you never know where the conversation's going to go when we get that wild and crazy guy here on the show. Also today, we're going to be joined by Mark Simon, formerly of ESPN Stats and Information. Now he's made a jump over to another analytical-based site that he is working with right now. We will talk some baseball with Mark, break down a little bit about the season, and some deeper thoughts on baseball, not just your cursory glance over teams, but dig into some minutiae a little bit with Mark Simon. Really looking forward to that. Then in hour number two, we're going to be joined as well. We'll talk some UNI basketball with Gary Rima. He'll stop by. Also, Kevin Lehman will be here, and we'll talk some March Madness Final Four with him. We'll hit on Loyola. We'll tape break down the matchup with Kansas Villanova and the new hire for Drake. Darren DeVries making his way in with the Bulldogs. Well, solo edition here today. Brinson off for Good Friday, celebrating Passover maybe. Who knows with Jimmy B? Luckily, I got people I could count on. One of those people, Wolfgang, who's stopping by for a conversation today. What's happening, Wolfie?
Well, it's not always Good Friday, but it's always kind of a Good Friday. It's always not the goodest of Goodest Friday, if I made any sense. It probably didn't.
No. You completely lost me there. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Friday. It's always Good Friday. It's always a fun Friday, but it's not always Good Friday. How about that?
It's not a football Friday, though a basketball Friday. We're getting ready for the Final Four tomorrow. You can hear the games if you're out and about tomorrow right here on 1700. Game number one, the Big Ten with another entrant into the Final Four. Michigan gets Loyola. Let's start with the Wolverines. Iowa gave them a tussle in the Big Ten tournament. Maybe a glimpse of what could come. One thing I do caution people when they bring that up, though, remember, Michigan didn't miss their first 13 three-pointers of the game. That doesn't happen very often with the Wolverines.
No, and that's what's totally cool. I brought this up a little bit. What's totally cool is when your team or a team you like finds a way to win, and we kind of know this in Iowa football, right? Watching Iowa football, there's sometimes where we're like, how did Iowa just win that game? If you're a Hawkeye fan, how did Iowa just get that done? And you're watching Michigan sometimes, you're going, man, offensively they kind of stink right now, but they're getting it done defensively. Mm-hmm. And then you go on the Texas A&M game, and you watch, like, that's one of the greatest offensive performances I've seen in the last 5 years or whatever. I'm going out, you know, a little bit too much and exaggerating a little bit. But I love me some Michigan. I love me some that. I love it. I love that coaching. I love what he does because I think coaching can make a difference. A huge difference. There's people that I respect and know and think that coaching is completely overrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I get what they're saying. I do. I understand that it's talent. It's mostly talent. But is it or is it not? I go back and forth on this, Trent, because if you watch all these teams now, and Duke has turned into a one-and-done team. It's crazy. All of a sudden now, I watched, and I think you wanted to do this in the summer, and I think it'll be fun, the rating the 30 for 30s. Didn't you bring that up to me?
Yeah, that'd be excellent. Absolutely.
Okay, see, I love that idea. I'm pretty sure that was your idea. And I watched the Christian Laettner one a few days ago. I came on and I recorded it. And I could not stand Christian Laettner. Could not stand him. Arrogant, pompous, smug, jerk, just idiot, Duke, you know, pukey, just puke city, watching Duke. And I watched that 30 for 30 on, what's it called? I Hate Christian Laettner, I think it was called.
Yes.
Hate Christian Laettner, and I ended up loving the guy by the end. I have no idea why. I don't know if it was just that he looked at people in the eye. Did you see when he went up to the ref and started cussing at him, and that ref cowered and turtled like I've never seen in my life? It's unbelievable when somebody has confidence, and you go up to somebody that doesn't have confidence, and he had confidence. Was he the greatest human being on earth, as Coach K would say? No, he wasn't. But he's a great guy and blah, blah, blah. He wanted to win, and he wanted to win hard. I would recommend watching I Hate Christian Laettner, and I'm probably going too far by saying you will actually like Christian Laettner at the end, but I did, and I can't believe it. I did. He was clutch. He hit those clutch shots, and what guy that doesn't grow up loving basketball, Trent? Remember out in the driveway?
Mm-hmm.
Five, four, three, two, one. I mean, that guy did it. He did it not only once, but twice. He has two of the best clutch shots in, they were both, I think, Elite Eight. I'm trying to think how that went.
Mm-hmm.
Connecticut was Elite Eight. When was the Kentucky game?
That was also Elite Eight. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So that doesn't make, to me, it doesn't make, well, I guess it makes it a little bit less. I mean, had it happened in the championship game, obviously, I would even consider that even better.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watched him, man, the dude just was ice cold, just didn't give a bleep what people said about him. A lot of people were calling him gay. I mean, they were yelling, like, chants at him and stuff and saying that he was in love with one of his teammates, and he talked about that with Brian Davis. Grant Hill was talking about how, you know, I'm not going to give Leitner all the pub. I'm not going to give him everything because I think he might have just been a bully at times. It was so good. A lot of people, if you don't like college basketball, I'm trying to think, would you like it or would you not? But I watched it with somebody that wasn't huge on him, didn't know it, and we just sat there and we just gobbled it up. I loved it. Did you watch that one, or do you even remember?
No, I watched it. I hated Christian Leitner then. I still hate the guy now, even after that one. Of course, to get to that Elite Eight game against Kentucky, some call the greatest game ever in the NCAA tournament, the Dukies had to get by Iowa in the second round that year and dispatch the Hawkeyes. 75-62 was the score in that one, but it was a great game. Absolutely loved it. I mean, that was wheelhouse time for me. Middle school of just locked and loaded for every single game. And you're right. I absolutely hated Duke. I was a UNLV guy. So the year before is when they knocked off UNLV in the Final Four. I despise Duke. I still to this day. And I was even rooting for Michigan. I was rooting for Michigan to get it done in that championship game. Obviously, didn't happen.
Okay, Trent. Trent, I got to put you on the spot. Do you remember why? I mean, we're going back a long time ago, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember, and so first of all, I want to ask you, do you remember where you were when you watched Duke, Kentucky? Because I do. And there's not a lot of things you could say that about.
Yes.
Do you remember when you watched that shot where you were?
I do, because I remember we were driving home, we were shopping in Mason City, because we had to go to Mason City to shop.
Lake, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so we were on our way back. I was listening to the game on the radio. I was with some family members. We got home, and then I watched it at my house. So hustled in. Probably saw, I want to say, maybe the last 8-10 minutes of regulation, and then obviously overtime and the game winner. But I remember it vividly. I remember being a little bit upset that we didn't get done shopping as quickly as I was promised, because I wanted to get home for the game. But yes, I do remember that very, very well, and exactly where I was. Where was the young Wolfgang at the time?
We were driving home from spring break. We had a van, and my dad had a TV in it.
Oh!
So we're on the back there, and you didn't have to sit. You could, like, put it down to where, if dad was driving, you could sleep,
mm-hmm.
You know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we drove a lot. We, you know, it was a little bit scary, actually. Like, geez, should we be driving at 3 in the morning and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, we're sitting there watching it, and I'm just like, so this was what year? How old would I have been? Anyway, I'm just sitting there watching this, Trent, and I'm going, is this as good as I think it is? I'm sitting there watching this with my brother, who's 2 years younger, and we're just like, God, this is awesome. We hated Duke. I didn't know anything about Kentucky or Pitino, I don't think, at the time. Was Pitino, at that time, was he well-known? I'm trying to think, did I even really know who he was at the time? But he's over there crying on the sidelines.
Right.
I just loved it. And I was not a Duke guy. And the greatest thing you can say right now about Mike Krzyzewski, what he's done, the evolution of his program, Trent,
mm-hmm.
where he decided, you know what, we're known as the white school, the privileged jerks that everybody hates, the snobby M bleepers, okay? What did he do? He went to the Olympics and made friends with Kobe and LeBron and all those guys. And what is it now? It's now cool to go to Duke. It is now cool to go to Duke. That's what Mike Krzyzewski did. Can you believe that? Are you agreeing with me or no? You look at these guys that are not, it's not some white privileged millionaire white boys that are playing there. It's like the best of the best, one guy's in and out. He's getting the talent of all talent. Now, is that good for Duke? I don't know. I mean, they had something going there. I mean, just, I don't know how you turn down Bagley Jr. or how you turn down all these guys. I have no idea how you would do that. But is it not weird that with the African Americans now, it's actually kind of, Duke is cool. It's a great school. This is the guy that made friends with Kobe, made friends with LeBron, made friends with Durant, and now Duke is cool. It's weird.
It is different. And I still, you know, there are a few people, you know, growing up that were Duke fans, and those people annoyed me. You don't have any connection to Duke. You just
wait a second, name them. You have to name them.
One of the guys is a guy that I met in college, Pete Nelson, who I played high school basketball against. And Pete, get this. So when I met Pete, he grew up in Sheffield. No, you know Sheffield up there, North Iowa. Played at SEMT. We throttled them in basketball. They thought they were good, playing in the Iowa Star Conference, and then they played some big boys from Osage and got throttled. But Pete, get this, a Duke basketball fan and a Florida State football fan. I said, Pete.
Really?
You can't.
Can we get him on right now? Can you call him live on the air right now?
I could. I probably could. He's working. But
does that not make good radio?
But Pete has now realized, as he has aged, that he's a Hawkeye fan now. So he, after years of berating him about being a Florida State football and Duke basketball fan, he realized you can't do that. It's just not the way of the world. And finally, he has acquiesced, and now he is back on the Hawkeye side of things. So good for Pete.
He was a bandwagon dude. So what years are we talking?
Well, I met him in the...
Because I want to go off on Pete.
I met him in the late 90s. One of my best friends in the world, grew up, and he was a Michigan fan. No connection to Michigan, didn't have family out there, anything like that. A Michigan fan, and a diehard Michigan fan. Finally, we get to college after people make fun of him. He becomes a Hawkeye fan, and now he's one of the biggest Hawkeye fans that I know.
College at you and I, Trent, right?
What's that?
College at UNI, you guys went, right?
Yes.
Okay. So he's still a Michigan fan, right?
No, not at all. He completely dropped the Michigan fandom. No more.
Okay.
Yeah. He learned the errors of his ways. And in fact, the last time he was a Michigan fan in college, we all went out to the Iowa-Michigan game in 2002. It was my first big road trip. Like, I've been to Minnesota plenty of times. I've been to Wisconsin. But this was our first time that group of us, we rented a bus. We partied on our way out there. He was wearing his David Terrell jersey, just being a dork like always. Watched the game. The Hawkeyes throttle him. And finally, after that season, he said, you know what, it's silly. It's time to grow up. It's time to cheer for the home state team. And he went to the Hawkeyes and completely dropped the Wolverines.
You know what, I respect that. I wish he would have realized the truth, capital T-R-U-T-H, before they got pummeled.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
is that not the worst arse-beating Michigan's ever? It's probably not. Okay,
In the big house, at the time it was. I don't know since then if there's been another. I'm, in fact, still hanging down in my man cave. I have the newspaper article from the next day from the Ann Arbor, Detroit newspaper, something like that, talking about it. And, that is one of the all-timers. That's my weird thing, Wolfgang. So, a lot of people, you go to bowl games and you can get, like, the trinkets or you get the beer stein or whatever it is. My thing, when I go to a road trip and I see a big Iowa victory, what I take my memento is I get a newspaper from the next day from whatever city that we're in. So, Orange Bowl, I got the first bowl game I went to, the Alamo Bowl. I got the San Antonio newspaper from the next day with the Hawkeyes on the cover. That's what I have. So if you ever make it over to the Man Cave, you can see articles from Hawkeye lore from all across the country. It's my favorite thing.
Dude, I love that.
Yeah.
That is really cool. Do you remember what so you're talking about the Orange Bowl when I was – because I went to that bowl game. You're talking about the Orange Bowl with USC?
No, because that was a loss. I don't want to hang that in the man cave. No.
Oh, I thought you said Orange Bowl. Okay,
yeah, no, the Georgia Tech one.
Oh, gotcha.
Yep.
Gotcha, okay.
Let's see what else I have.
You get the home, so you get, like, Miami's home paper?
Yep. Get the paper from whatever city I'm in, and sometimes there isn't anything good in there, and I've been disappointed. I have something from the Capital One Bowl when the catch with Warren Holloway, but it wasn't a great cover. I was a little disappointed in the Orlando Sentinel the next
what
day.
What do you remember? You got it. And then I also need to know what Ann Arbor said after what you say. We beat them worse than anybody in their home stadium history.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Yeah, in the big house, it might have been like their worst loss since 1962 or something like that. Whatever it was,
a long time. May not be the worst one ever, but okay. oh, man, I need to know what those say. So, yeah. You'll have to bring that up next time we come on because I need to know. That's fun, man. That's a fun idea, bringing up the home. You know, what did the Ann Arbor newspaper say about Iowa just destroying them, killing them, and just taking their manhood? Bob Sanders looking at somebody over on the sideline after he caught a pass, and Bob Sanders bullets to him, hits him so hard, the guy gets up and goes, it was just a look on his face, like if this were a cartoon or something like that, if this were a, whatever, like a bubble above his head would say, is this guy human? He looked at Bob Sanders like he wasn't human, like he was actually some sort of, like some part of our military, like some sort of secret weapon we had that nobody knew about. It was one of those expressions that I love. I don't really like fiction. I like more like movies that are based on true stories, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Fiction, I like fiction, but I like more the documentary type stuff and the movies that are based on like stuff at least somewhat closely based on real stuff. That's the stuff that gets me off. And to watch that Bob Sanders stuff, I just love a documentary, a 30 for 30 on just that hit when he made the guy look at him like, yeah, I'm from Michigan, I'm a 5-star. Wait, you're a 2-star that nobody wanted? And he just killed me. Oh, Bob Sanders. I could talk to him. I could talk about him for days.
He was a transformative player. There's no doubt about Iowa during that time. All right. Well, speaking of transformative players, we move away from the Final Four. We'll get back into that in a moment before we let you run, Wolfgang. But spring football going on. The media had a chance to go through, watch a half-hour practice the other day. Heard from a couple assistant coaches, Reese Morgan, along with Seth Wallace, the defensive line and linebackers coach, respectively, for the Hawkeyes. So as they're going through spring right now, this is a question that I popped to a couple of different people. What's the position group that still concerns you the most? What's a problem area as you look at it, Wolfgang?
Boy, that is an interesting question. I'd be interested to see what people say. It sounds like Reese Morgan believes in his defensive line. Sounds like they went out to Georgia. And I guess Georgia plays a ton of people on defensive line. Over the years, we've said what, Trent? We're always wondering, why aren't we getting fresh bodies in there? Why do you always have to play your best players? Because your best players always aren't your best players because of win, because of, you know, just getting tired. That'll make a fool out of us all. Getting tired, if you watch MMA or UFC or wrestling, or, I mean, you get tired, you can look like an idiot and a joke. So I like the fact, I'm not going to need to go, what did I read, Rob Halrode or something, like, we're going to go 8 to 10 on the D-line?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, that's, okay. I'm not saying he said that. I need to go back and read that. But I'm not saying we can't go, you know, a decent amount to keep everybody fresh, because it doesn't look like we have the size on the defensive line. But I respect him so much, that Reese Morgan so much. When I was at Iowa, he came in and talked to one of our classes, Trent, and the dude, I mean, you could tell back then. I mean, I'm getting older, and I mean, this way back in the day when he had won championships, and we're just listening to a guy. I mean, he wasn't that huge or anything at the time, but I remember just listening to him going, yeah, Reese Morgan, this guy's going to be something. I mean, he already is something. I don't care how big he wants to be. If he wants to go to college, he should be able to do that. He's already a stud high school coach, but you listen to Reese Morgan talk, back then, I don't know about now, I saw him almost tear up. Did you see that, Trent?
Yeah, just what it means to be a coach, and yeah, very cool to see.
Do you like that, or do you hate that?
No, yeah, no.
I like when something means something so much to somebody,
yeah,
that they do that. And I've changed my opinion on that. I used to think that was wussy like 15 years ago.
Yeah, Dick Vermeil, a perfect example of that. I remember when I saw Dick Vermeil up there and crying and carrying on with the Rams and then with the Chiefs, and it was like, come on, what's going on here? You're a football coach. Now, maybe we're just getting old, Wolfgang. Sentimental side finally starting to kick in with us.
No, be real here. Literally, we'll talk about this again because you know I'm into this stuff. Is it just because we're getting older? And I've heard your boy Ken Miller say that, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think Ken said, you know, I've gotten more sentimental over the years and
yes.
Stuff. Am I wrong or am I making?
No, Ken's told me, I mean, there's commercials that make him cry. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not making this up.
Ken Miller, the old curmudgeon of the market here, where, you know, brought sports talk radio to this market, a guy that always kind of had that grumpy demeanor, and now he's crying at commercials.
I'm not laughing at Ken. You know that, right?
Right.
Anyway, I don't want to talk about myself right now, but yeah, stuff gets to me, and I don't look at people negatively anymore. It makes me actually like them more if it means that much to them.
Mm-hmm.
If something means so much to them that you're, God, I'm sounding like a wuss here. I know I am, but I don't really care. How about that? Yeah.
Yes. Yes, very, very good. So, spring football, you talked about the defensive line. So is that still it for you? Is the defensive line still, though, the concern most?
No, understand, people, that we did not talk about this beforehand, right?
No.
Okay, so, yeah, I might need a little more time to think about that. So, I mean, if Reese Morgan is saying he wants to play 6, 7, 8, 9 guys, then I got to believe that he really means that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw it last year. I mean, we saw them rotate in more when they went down and they visited Georgia this year. I think it just reinforced what they had talked about and what they were starting to do. So you're going to see a lot of dudes out there and fresher dudes. And the way the collegiate game's played anymore, Wolfgang, it's not like it was even 10 years ago where it was 60 plays a game at most. Now you're on the field 80, some 90, even 100 times your defense is on the field for plays. You can't expect guys to be able to play that many plays, big guys at the defensive line position.
Oh, that's interesting.
It just makes sense. It makes sense to do that, and Iowa has been able to build and develop depth. Now, not having Davion Nixon this year inside, that is a little bit concerning, because as deep as they are at the defensive end position, they have a slew of guys that can throw out there. Inside, I think the depth there probably concerns me a little bit more. Cedric Lattimore, he's got to take a step forward this year. He was a placeholder, kind of felt like last year. Now we got to see him making some plays and get in the backfield, doing a little more disruption. Got his feet wet last year. Now is the time for him to take a big step forward. If he does that, they're going to be in good shape. And that, if this defensive line is as good as I think it has a chance to be, you know, if they can get 30, 35 sacks, you know, something like that, then I'm not nearly as concerned about the linebackers. I was linebackers. If the defensive line in front of them is good, they're going to be good.
All right, let me go conspiracy theorist on you. Do we have time or no?
Yeah. What do you got?
Okay, let me go conspiracy theorist on you. What has changed? Why would Reese Morgan and the coaching staff decide to go out to Georgia and say, maybe we need to play 8, 9, 10 people? Why would they say that? And then I'll give you my opinion.
Well, I think it's something that they've already started doing. Look at last year. So
you don't think it has anything to do with what they have on the team? Maybe their interior guys aren't elite, so they need to keep guys fresh so they can be closer to elite. Does that make any sense what I said there?
Yeah, it does. And I think there's some validity to that. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, if they had, you know, Aaron Donald in the middle, they're not going to be replacing him with Garrett Jensen. I mean, just that's different. So they got a bunch of guys.
Well, it is different, but I agree. I think guys need a breath.
Yeah.
And a drink of water
yeah.
every once in a while.
Yeah.
I do. I'm sorry. I'm not a football coach. So don't pretend to even be able to sit down with a football coach and say anything. Basketball coach, I'll sit down and I will stick my chin out and go, punch me if you want. And I will destroy you. Not in every facet, but I will tell you things that you do wrong that are embarrassing. Football guys, I don't pretend to know even close to what they know.
Right.
Okay, I could point out some stuff, and I won't feel confident. I won't feel confident about what they may bring back, Trent. Does that make any sense? But it's interesting that they want to go to more guys, and we're like, do we really have that many guys, Trent? I don't know.
Yeah.
You tell me.
No, well, I think
maybe
so.
We do.
I think
we do.
So.
I looked at the 2D. Mm-hmm. I did. And we got a bunch of good guys. Do we have great guys? I don't know.
I think Anthony Nelson can be great. I think A.J. Epinesa can be great. I know that, and we've seen Parker Hesse's very good, so there's three off the bat that you're feeling really good about. But inside, after Lattimore, it's Brady Reif, it's Garrett Jansen, it's Dallas Jacobus, a young guy that was a walk-on. So that's the part that you also kind of throw in and wonder, how do you get to that 8-10? If it's that's the number, there are some more question marks there. But no, I feel confident. For me, it's still the interior of the
linebackers.
No, not linebacker. They'll be fine. Yeah,
what do you mean,
Christian?
Jackson, linebacker? You feel good with?
Yeah, because these guys have been around. Nick Niemann's been around. Christian Welch has been around. Menz and Jones, they've been around. We're not talking about a bunch of new guys. If it was, hey, Dylan Doyle, we need him to step in right away and be the middle linebacker as a true freshman, I would be concerned with that. But these are veteran guys. They've just been behind three other guys that were
But you have to pick a group, Trent. I mean, you have to pick a group.
Yes.
You may need to pick a group.
Who's
your group?
It's the interior of the offensive line. It's inside there.
I didn't know you could get that crazy.
What?
Either offensive line or interior.
All right, it's the offensive line.
You're being mean to me right now.
No.
You went interior of offensive line. It's either offensive line, linebackers, defensive backs. I mean, what are you doing here? Interior. Come on, stop that.
Well,
obviously,
all right.
I could have said that.
I'll take the offensive line as a whole then. All right? Because we have seen plenty of players throughout the years show glimpses as a freshman. We certainly saw that out of Alaric Jackson and Tristan Wirfs a season ago. But now, sophomores, still room to be had there. Those guys also had help last year. They had help with a guy that's going to be a first-round draft pick in James Daniels at center. They had a four-year starter in Sean Welch. Those guys are gone. It is the interior of the offensive line more. I still think Wirfs and Jackson are going to be fine. But, I mean, if you just take defensive tackle, that's two spots. I'm talking about three possessions here. Left,
yeah,
right, guard, and center.
Good
come
point.
On. Come on, Wolfgang.
Point. No, hey, I tell you when I'm wrong. That's a good point. So I'm sitting there, nah, if you want me to just BS and I can say, you know, no, I agree with you. That's a good point. I'm worried about the defensive interior line. You're right.
You're absolutely
right. Defensive ends, I'm not.
Right. And that's a position group. All right, Wolfgang, we got a minute left here. Your picks, who are we going to be talking about Monday playing for a national championship?
Villanova's going to win it all. I think both you and I have had that from day one,
yep.
I believe. I like their program. I like to root for them. I think they do it the right way. I like their coach. Unfortunately, Tiff thinks he's handsome, so maybe I'll root against them.
Nova win it all. Who you got, Michigan and Loyola?
I'm going to go Michigan, but I'm going to root for Loyola. There's somebody in my family that was very, 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 very close to going there. I don't know who to root for. You know what? Either way, I'm fine. Either way, I'm fine.
Good stuff. All right, Wolfgang. We'll talk to you Monday. Be good.
Thanks, Trent. See you, bud.
There's Wolfgang checking in with us. Always fun with him. We'll take a timeout. We got lots more to come here on the program today. We'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. It's Jimmy B and TC on 1700 KBGG. All right, we're back as opening day yesterday and baseball season upon us. Joining us right now, one of our old friends to the program, Mark Simon. Talked to Mark for a number of years now. And Mark, before we get into the baseball, tell us a little bit about your new gig. A long time with ESPN and ESPN.com, Baseball Tonight. Now working for Sports Info Solutions. Tell us about what's going on with the new job.
I guess you could say that I'm one of the nerds that is trying to change the game or ruin the game in some people's minds, but we're not. We are data collectors and data compilers, and we are the people who tell you, hey, the shift works, or hey, this player is really good defender and this player isn't, or hey, we project Ian Happ for 28 home runs this season, even though you might say that he should have 35. We do a lot of that. My job is a lot of different things. Writing is a big component of it. We'll be writing for the Athletic website, if people are familiar with that. You can find us there. Social media, if you follow our Twitter, sportsinfo_SIS, you will find all sorts of fun things. Yesterday we did stuff on four-man outfield. We did stuff on defense-related things. Pitch framing, all sorts of fun, advanced statistical topics that allow you to watch baseball a little bit smarter.
That is very cool. And in the analytical world, for many, sabermetrics is a dirty word that I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know about it. But we're seeing it pilfer more and more into just game-by-game broadcasts. As you know, Mark, I'm a big Twins fan, and even Dick Bremer, an old guard, he's changing a little bit. He'll bring up OPS. He'll bring up some different things. So it trickles in even to your day-to-day broadcast. But, you know, one of the things I know defense has been over, what, the last three, four, 5 years. That's been something that baseball and people like you have been trying to find a way. All right, we have these numbers. How exactly? What does it mean? How do we measure it? What's the next frontier? What's the next thing with all these numbers that are out there? Exit velocity. You know, I laugh with one of my co-hosts about exit velocity. I brought that up three, 4 years ago when it first started to become a little bit more prominent. And now you see it all the time. What's the next frontier for sabermetrics, for stats and information that you do, that you guys are trying to tackle?
I think that you're going to see an increase in the way that teams position their outfielders outside the norm. You had the one yesterday with the Astros playing Foreman in the outfield against Joey Gallo, and it worked. I think you will see a lot of teams swing their center fielders way over to right center field. When a right-handed hitter is at bat, he tends to hit the ball in the air to the opposite field, to the right and right center. And a left-handed hitter, unless you're really strong, like the upper-level guys in the sport, you tend to hit fly balls in the air to left or left center field. And I think teams are starting to come to a realization that their outfielders need to really swing way over more. There's one player in particular for whom I think that's mostly already true, and that's a twin, Joe Mauer. Teams certainly play him way over towards left field now, and I think you're going to see that increase to more players. So that may be a sabermetric frontier that I think is going to be penetrated in the next few years.
Defensive positioning. Mark, we were laughing yesterday. I told Ken, one of my co-hosts over the noon hour, that Anthony Rizzo, he hit a homer yesterday. He's my second baseman because of the defensive shifting that they did a year ago. He played 10 games at second base, quote-unquote second base, and with their shifting, and now is eligible at that spot. So with all these shifting parts and everything that goes into it, I know it works. I know that it's something that the numbers bear it out, but there's something that feels a little bit dirty about it. Like, almost you're cheating the game. You get where I'm going?
Yes, totally. But you know what it is? You're so used to watching the game the other way.
Right.
That's all it is. Like, if baseball was invented now, the game would probably be a little different. Because I think people would realize, okay, we're going to, like, the shifting would not be considered abnormal. Shifting's considered abnormal because nobody did it or very few people did it for 100-odd years. So when you were a little kid and grew up watching the game, you didn't necessarily see it. Now you do, and you're like dumbfounded by it. But like, if you're just becoming a baseball fan and this is all you know, this isn't going to be abnormal to you. So I don't know that there's necessarily anything dirty about it. By the way, I'm talking about shift stuff. No one's lost more hits in the last year to shifts than Mr. Rizzo. Him and Mitch Moreland.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, 20. I think it's 21, 22.
not a surprise. Yeah, watching as many Cubs games as
that.
I do, yeah. It,
right.
Yeah, it just the way of the world. And four man outfields or extra infielders at times, those are the little things that have happened. It's just, I don't know. There's a part of it that leads me to just wonder what's next, you know, and what else can be done defensively. It's certainly a different game, and it continues to evolve. It continues to change. Another metric and another thing that people are working to change, Mark, and I want to get your thoughts on this, is the pace of play. Now, here in Des Moines, we have the pitch clock at the AAA Stadium, and first time I went there, it was a little bit jarring. It's like, oh, look at this. Well, I think it had been maybe a month into the season. The guys were already used to it. This is a few years back. And now when I go to a ball game and I go watch the Iowa Cubs, it's just another part of the game. I love it. Why has there been so much pushback from the Players Association about this?
Because you're taking players out of the norms that they had for so long. And I think there are concerns about pitchers rushing and pitchers getting. There's some thought that there are more injuries when you put the pitch clock into play. And some pitchers like to really, I guess, take their time. That's a minority, though. Like, they should, the majority should ideally rule in this case. I think they're just worried, too, about things going to certain extremes. Things aren't going to go to extremes. They're just when something happens that is an extreme, baseball's going to try and halt it. They're just trying to cut the extremes off. Most players probably won't even notice the pitch clock, as you said. So I would certainly be in favor of it.
Let's hope we get there, and I'm sure we will at some point, but kicking and screaming, and we'll have to drag them there to get them there and improve the pace of play. What else can be done? I know there were a few other things that were implemented. You know, mound visits was a big part of it, and I understand why they're trying to do it, tighten up the game, younger viewers, you know, all these things, short attention spans, all these things that we throw out, but I don't know. It just, if you're a baseball fan and the game goes 3 hours and 20 minutes as opposed to 2:55, is it that big of a deal?
Yeah, they're concerned about the future there. I think that the younger people won't like that. The older people like it. It doesn't really bother me too much. In terms of what can be done, now that I don't work for a TV network anymore, I can say it. Less commercials. Right. Shorter commercials.
Yeah.
Like what Fox, ESPN did during the Home Run Derby. They did like the 6-second split screens during the Home Run Derby with T-Mobile commercials. Fox, I think, experimented with 15-second commercials. That would help. That would help a lot, I think.
Well, we got the early start to the season, the earliest start with all the teams at least scheduled to play, a couple rainouts yesterday. Now, this is the part, as I mentioned, as a Twins fan, this is the dreaded day. You get opening day. Now you got an off day. You got to wait. This is the part of the schedule.
I know that loss.
Yes, off a loss is even worse. I know they got to do this, especially when you're playing in places like Baltimore and Detroit and Cincinnati, wherever it is. You have to build these days in case there is a rainout. But boy, it just you get so excited about opening day, and then it's a thud, and you got to wait another day. This is the part that I don't like about the early start.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's been true all my life, though. And actually, I think they did something smart that the second day for a lot of those teams now is now Saturday, where you might draw a little bit better than, like, typically your attendance goes like 48,000, 12,000, you know, 25,000 the rest of the season. And it's always funny to see that drop for the second game. The second game's kind of like the ugly stepchild. But yes, as a person who follows the Mets intensely, I'm a little disappointed that there's no baseball today.
Yeah, it's there's still games. We'll still find plenty to talk about. All right, Mark.
Max Scherzer's pitching. That's the good one.
Yes, absolutely. Locked and loaded for that one. Mark Simon joining us right now. Sports Info Solutions here on the program today. All right, Mark, want to get into a couple of the local teams, get your thoughts on it, and start with, well, we talked to Anthony Rizzo. Let's start with the Cubs. Expectations, as you can imagine, certainly huge for this team. I'm a believer. After last year, seemed like a World Series hangover. I don't know if you can quantify that, but it did feel like it was there last year for the first couple months of the season. Locked and loaded, stacked up. Yu Darvish comes in. Maybe a few question marks about the bullpen. Just how good is this Cubs team, and do you see them in the same vein as the Dodgers, as the Nationals? You know, maybe roll a three-sided coin to figure out who you want to pick out of that group. But you see that Cubs in the conversation at the very least, right?
Yeah, I do. I think if you're rolling out Chatwood as your four or your five, that is an indication that you have a pretty deep starting rotation. The bullpen, you do have Morrow, and I guess to figure out whether or not he's going to be a good closer, the indications seem to think that he is. Carl Edwards Jr., it's funny, there are a lot of leaderboards that we keep, and I think strikeouts to hits, he's like the best. One of the best in the game, so I would still take him, even though his ERA seems to run higher than what you would think it would run. The lineup's very good, and I think that in the end that's what's going to carry the Cubs through. And I think Ian Happ is going to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think if your weakest link in the lineup is really like Hayward, you're doing pretty well. Just keep the ball away. They should do the outfield switcheroo with Hayward and Schwarber.
Oh, go left to right, move them back.
Like the Phillies were doing with their guys.
Mm-hmm.
Put Schwarber where the ball's not going to be.
Makes sense. And we saw that a little bit yesterday, too. He had a play up against the wall that was not a thing of beauty. He slimmed down, but even slimmed down. Yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be a great defender. With that, this team, the flexibility that they have, I just love that the moving parts that they can do, moving guys around, the depth, it just seems like it's all set up there. If there is going to be a team that chases them down, I don't see it happening in the division, but Brewers and Cardinals, is there one of those two teams that you like more? I personally believe we might see a little regression out of the Brewers this year, just after Chase Anderson, who is very, very solid. I have so many question marks about that staff. They're going to score. It's going to be like a beer league softball team, maybe a lot of 10-8 games. But the Brewers, the Cardinals, who do you like more of those two?
Well, I put the Cardinals in the playoffs, and after yesterday, I was starting to regret it a little bit.
Right.
I just think that they always put together a team that you think is going to be there at the end of the season. The problem that I think a lot of people in St. Louis have is that they have concerns about A, their rotation, and B, their manager. I think the manager concerns are a little silly. I think that Carlos Martinez is certainly a lot better than he showed yesterday. I think when Wainwright comes back, it seems to be that he's thinking that this might be, that they might make this his last year. And then they have the question of who's the closer, but they got Holland.
Mm-hmm.
They always do the things that put themselves in position to be successful. So I think they're still in that 85-86 win range. I think they have the Brewers like a notch below that. And I think that they're legit lineup-wise, as you said. I'm a little concerned at the end of the game because I don't think that Knebel can duplicate what he did. And I guess, like you, I'd be a little concerned with the rotation.
All right, we finish up with my selfish question of the day, and that is the Minnesota Twins. Mm-hmm. It's a team, young lineup that really took a step forward. Polanco, who is a part of that resurgence in the second half, he's out for 80 games. But I want to get your thoughts on the rotation. Odorizzi comes in on a trade. They get Lance Lynn on a one-year deal. But with Urban Santana out for probably 2 months, at the top, Jose Berríos. Do you see him being able to take another step after a fine rookie season, first full year in the big leagues last year? Do you see still more upside to him? Do you have any maybe numbers for Berríos that you look at? Because there are times that he looks outstanding, and there's times that you're just kind of left scratching your head.
The troubles of dealing with a young pitcher.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have any numbers on him, but he looked very good, as you said. And the very good tends to shake out the very bad as pitchers go from, like, 23 to 24 to 25. So he's someone who I think is a reasonable, hey, sleeper or superstar kind of guy. Rest of the rotation, I think two things to keep in mind are that Odorizzi and Lynn were both helped very much by their defenses last year, and that the Twins' defense is going to have to be pretty good behind them because they're not blow-you-away kind of guys. But with that in mind, they were very good behind Irvin Santana last year, and they were pretty good in general as a team, although a lot of that is center fielder making amazing catches and saving runs all over the place.
That definitely helps, having that guy out there. Byron Buxton patrolling in center field. He runs down a lot of those balls to the gaps, and he is certainly worth the price of admission. Mark Simon, as always, good catching up with you. Baseball season upon us once again. It feels very, very good. Thanks a lot, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. See you later.
Yep, we'll see ya. There he is, Mark Simon, long time with ESPN, ESPN Stats and Information, now over at Sports Info Solutions. You can find Mark on Twitter at Mark A. Simon Says. Or you can find the Sports Information Solutions, sportsinfo_SIS, for all the details. We're taking a break, coming back more here to come later in the program today. I will give you my final four picks. I have a feeling I'm on the right side of both things. I have Villanova to win the national title. Might be doing a little bit of hedging. I just sneaking suspicion about the Jayhawks. Maybe I'm believing in the ridiculous things, but I'll make my picks here before 6 o'clock, and we'll take you up until then. Of course, all the games here for the Final Four on 1700. If you're out and about Saturday night, got things going on, whatever it may be, we have you covered. Lock it in here to 1700. Real sports talk for real sports fans. We're back with more in a moment. Back one final time here in hour number one. Coming up next hour, we have the voice of the UNI Panthers, Gary Rima. Stop by for a conversation on the Panthers, putting a cap on basketball, a look at spring football. We'll talk Loyola with him and the MVC, all to come here in the second hour. Also, Kevin Lehman, a breakdown of the Final Four coming your way in hour number two. Also in hour number two, I will make my official picks. I'll give you some picks against the point spread. Should be a good time there. We'll do that coming up next here as we take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. Your home and away voice for March Madness in the NCAA tournament right here on 1700. If you're out and about, not able to watch the games, maybe traveling around on a Saturday evening, lock it in here to 1700. We'll have you covered with Westwood One coverage of the Final Four and, of course, the national championship game on Monday night. Quick timeout, back with more on the other side. The 5 o'clock hour is next on 1700.